and welcome to the Back of the Party with Megan. This is my podcast brought to you in partnership with my friends over at Zoda Pop. If you are listening in via audio, we also have video versions available on Spotify and on YouTube, so join the party however you wish. We are at the halfway mark. I can't believe this is episode 5. This first season is 10 episodes, and I'm really excited, so let's just head straight to the Back of the Party. So today's episode is going to be a new way to go boss your solo travels, go bossing it. So if you follow me on my personal socials, like my Instagram, you would know that I love traveling solo. In fact, most of the time I would prefer to travel solo. And you guys have asked me a lot of questions about it. I think especially because, number one, solo travel is not like a huge thing here in Singapore, I reckon. And number two, I think because as a female, traveling solo can be very scary. So I often get a lot of questions about like tips or like how I keep myself safe, things like that. So that's some of the stuff that I'm going to touch on today. So some of the things that we're going to cover today include why I like traveling solo, how I got started, and if you also want to try traveling solo, then how you can sort of work your way around that, and for some of you, you know, convince your parents. I'm also going to be talking about the pros and cons of traveling solo, and then how I approach it to kind of like circumvent those cons and then play up the pros. You know, you really gotta girl boss this experience. And I kind of feel like this episode is going to be a little bit unhinged because I've got all these stories from my solo travels that I've actually never really told anybody. They're pretty crazy. I'm going to say right now that if you are my mom, my dad, my grandma, or, you know, anybody related to me, I want you to stop listening to this podcast right now. Like, you need to press pause and get off because this episode is not for you. I don't want you hearing what I got up to when I was traveling solo. But if you are not my mom, my dad, or my grandma, you're welcome to stay on and listen to these stories. So because I started preparing for this episode like last week, I started thinking about some of the solo travel stories that I had, and then I shared some with my friend. And my friend was like, "How are you still alive?" And then she was going around telling her friends, she was like, "Guys, we are so blessed to have Megan still around with us. Like, you should hear what she gets up to when she travels solo." So I'm gonna spill all the tea today. You're gonna hear all about my unhinged stories, and let's just get right into it. So let's start from the very beginning, like how I started traveling solo. And I think a lot of it I owe to the fact that I was very privileged to be able to travel when I was younger, and to have parents who are kind of like very open to the idea, and then also parents who like see the value in traveling. So because I traveled a lot when I was younger, and I spent like quite a bit of time in Australia, how I started traveling solo was by starting out in Australia. So because I was like familiar with the area, I think my mum felt a lot more assured that I could sort of like handle myself. And then on top of that, I also had a lot of family in Australia. My grandma was staying there at that point in time. So my very first solo trip was actually when I was primary 6. So that I was like 12 years old. I just finished my primary school leaving examination. Little 12-year-old me hopped onto an SIA plane and I was like, hopped up a plane, like type of vibe, you know? I was like really like living it up. And because I was like still a minor at that point in time, the SIA staff really took good care of me. Like, guys, I got upgraded to business class. Like, not me, little 12-year-old Megan, like, sitting in business class on an 8-hour flight to Australia. Obviously, I had my grandmother waiting for me, like, at the other end. When I got off, the SIA staff, like, escorted me out. But I was, like, sitting there in the business class, and then the stewardess was, like, so nice to me. I was like, damn, I could really get used to this. So I kind of feel like all the experiences traveling with my mom when I was younger, and then having that first taste of like sitting in a plane alone, that kind of all added up to this like travel bug. And I've always just loved to travel and appreciated traveling. And I think one of the things that I loved most about being in Australia when I was younger was just the exposure to art. I guess like art culture in Australia is so different. There is just so much all the time. And my mom brought me to a lot of those arts events. Like, I remember going to jazz shows, to like theater in the park sort of scenarios, and I loved that so much. I guess as I grew up, I went into art school and everything. I couldn't really ever find that same sort of organic, like really organic arts culture, and so I craved like traveling overseas to find that. And also, you know, sitting in business class at 12 years old, like, babes, that really helps. Yeah, like, the fact that from 12 years old up to now, I'm 24 this year, okay, and I've never sat in business class since. Like, that haunts me, okay? Like, nobody should have put me in business class at age of 12, okay? Because that haunts me. I'm like thinking, like, when is the next time I'm going to be able to afford business class? I don't even know. And nowadays, like, business class is, like, the equivalent. Like, people don't even write first class anymore. Like, business class is so good that it's, like, first class, right? And you know how big the business class seats are? I was, like, small little girl, like, sitting in that huge seat felt amazing, okay? So that was my first, like, solo travel, which was just me basically, like, sitting in the plane alone. But I enjoyed it. I wasn't scared, surprisingly. I wasn't scared at all. I think I've always been quite, like, an independent sort of person, even as a child. But I think, like, the real start of me traveling solo was maybe in 2018 when I had graduated from SOTA. So I was waiting for university, I was working, I was doing my commercial stuff, I was earning, like, some money. So then when I went to Australia in 2018, I went to Sydney with my grandma, but then we stayed up in Blue Mountains, and I took a couple of days off to travel down into the city, and I stayed in the city with a friend. And that was, like, I think my first real taste of, like, traveling in a place alone. And my grandma, my parents, like, trusted me enough to do that because, number one, I have, like, family in Sydney, right? If really, like, push comes to shove, I need help, like, there's that to fall back on. But then number two, also because I've been in Australia so many times by then that I was just really familiar with the city. Like, I could walk around and, like, kind of, like, get around on my own, right? And I remember staying with my friend in 2018 in the dorm rooms of, is it University of New South Wales? Like, sometimes I forget that I do these, like, ridiculous things. And then when I think back on it, it's just so ridiculous. So I stayed with my friend in University of New South Wales, okay? And I attended classes. I really, like, rolled up into class with my friend, like, in the psychology lecture, and I was like, oh, this is fun. And on the other days that I wasn't in lecture, or wasn't, like, in the school library, I was just, like, walking around the city. Because I had been to Sydney, like, so many times before, it wasn't like, oh, I want to see, like, the Sydney Opera House. I wasn't interested in, like, hitting any of, like, touristy spots, and I didn't have that many days there either, so I sort of just went into the city. I walked around some of the museums, just, like, sat and, like, people watched, like, started walking down into, like, different alleys and then finding different foods to eat. Like, I remember my favorite find was this little bagel spot in between all these, like, office buildings, like, behind in an alley, and it was so good. I think one of the really nice things about traveling solo, which I experienced at that bagel spot, was that that gives you the chance to, like, connect with people if you're open to it, right? So, like, I was just sitting at the bagel spot, I was alone, and then just chatted with these, like, two other guys at the bagel spot. They were just, like, businessmen. I don't know, it was so random. I don't even remember what we talked about, but it was like, oh, it was like a refreshing experience, right? So I eventually, like, headed back up to Blue Mountains to join my family again. But then the next time I went back to Australia, which was only just, like, a couple of months later, I ended up going back to Sydney again and then taking a domestic flight to Melbourne to look for, like, my other family in Melbourne, but then also to spend time, like, with myself, like, solo traveling, exploring Melbourne. And then I got to spend a lot of time with my cousin and our friends. So I really enjoyed that. It was like, oh, my first kind of, like, taste of freedom, and then also having enough money to, like, fund that sort of trip, right? And then this brings me to, like, my next solo travel experience, which was to Korea. The fortunate thing also was that I also have family in Korea. Again, that would be, like, a failsafe if I needed one. But I think it also helped that I knew how to speak Korean. And also, I kind of had already chalked up, like, a little bit of experience, like, being on my own in a foreign country. So my parents agreed to it, and then I ended up taking a two-week trip to Korea. So 1 week I did alone, then 1 week my best friend joined me. And I will say that most of my really crazy stories come from Korea, which we will get to in a bit. So now that you have, like, a little bit of background into how I started doing it, let's talk about, like, why I like doing it so much, right? Sometimes I'm like, thinking, like, oh, I want to go to this place, and my friends are like, oh, do you want to go to this place together? And I'm kind of like, do I really want to go with my friends? Like, I really have to convince myself to be like, okay, you know what? Spending time with friends is good. It's not good to always be alone. I think I'm just a person who just really love being alone and really like having that a lot of, like, space to myself, not having, I guess, like, constraints around my life, especially, like, when I travel. I think there's so many different things that I want to do, and I just don't like that when you travel with somebody, you have to, like, consider them. I mean, that brings me to my first point of, like, why I like traveling solo so much. Traveling solo, number one, gives you, like, a lot of freedom. The thing about traveling with friends is that you kind of, either have to find a friend who likes the exact same things that you do, or you're going to have to come to a compromise somewhere along the way. You're going to have like some activities that you're like, oh, I don't really want to do this, or I don't really want to go here, but my friend really wants to, or like, oh, I want to go to this place, but I know my friend doesn't want to, and I feel bad for dragging my friend along with me. And when you travel solo, like, you don't have to think about that at all. And not only do you get to kind of like decide where you want to go and like what you want to do, you also decide when you want to do it, right? And I think in the past, like in my experience, like when you travel with friends, like an itinerary is super important. Like, you need to map out like every day, what are we going to do, which are the spots we want to hit, so that everybody sort of, you know, gets a taster of what they like, right? But when you travel alone, right, you can sort of just draw up a list of the things you want to do and then decide, when I wake up, what do I feel like doing today? I don't really feel like walking in the outdoors. I don't feel like, you know, bustling with the crowds. Maybe I'll just go to a quiet museum. Or if today I wake up, I'm like, oh, I want to, like, you know, be active. I want to, like, be in the sun. And then you can just, like, change your plans. You don't have to, like, ask someone else, right? Whether it's, like, family or friends. You don't have to be accountable to anybody else. So there's a lot of, like, freedom. And I think I really, like, relish in that freedom. Especially because, I guess, when you're back here, like in Singapore, like wherever you come from, right, there are just so many things all the time that kind of like dictate your behavior, like be it your job, your schedule, your family, all your different like social commitments. Like, there's so many things that demand your attention that I kind of feel like when I go overseas, I don't want to be restricted that way. I want to have the space to like play and discover, and not just discover like the place that I'm in, but also discover like myself. And I mean, speaking of like discovering the place that you're in, I find that one of the best ways to discover like a country or discover the new place that you're in is honestly just to walk around. Like, I think in the past when I used to travel, like I would drop very detailed itineraries, like, oh, like at this timing, like this, like 10 a.m. wake up, 11 a.m. leave the house, 11:30 a.m. reach the cafe, completely like pack myself silly. But then as I started to travel alone, especially in Australia, where I was a little bit more familiar with the landscape, I could sort of just take the time to walk and like wander around the city and then find all these like hidden gems that don't come up on Google, right? They're not like touristy spots, but they're spots that really give character to the places and sort of like give you a glimpse into what life is like here in this place, or like what kind of like food you can get that's not like touristy, or like that's not like, you know, on the map, right? So not only do you get the freedom to like explore the place, but then you also get the freedom to like discover yourself. I think it's very much similar to all the things that I've said in like the previous episodes, right? Like, let's say with like university or health, it's just this constant process of like trial and error, and like you have to like do things in order to figure out where you stand with them, and then really like check in with yourself and be like, okay, did I enjoy this experience? Or like, what did I like about this experience? Or like, what did I like about walking around? What did I like about this place? What did I like about observing these people? And when you sort of like tap into that awareness of your surroundings, that's when you can really like learn about yourself. I mean, not only that, right? Like, how often when you're in your day-to-day life, are you actually out of autopilot mode? I feel like so often we tend to like fall into these patterns of just, you know, switching off our brains, going to autopilot, you know, like, okay, I have to wake up at a certain time, eat my breakfast, go to work, do all these like tasks, get off work, go for dinner. How often do you really get time to take a step back and think about, you know, what's been going on in your life, or what kind of choices you've been making? And I feel like traveling is such a good space for that, because you're removed from your literal like social environment that you're steeped in every single day, and you can kind of afford a little bit more time to be like introspective. And I think that's something that I really realized like the last two trips that I took to Australia. So I just returned from two trips to Australia, actually. I went at the end of December and then came back about the middle of January, and then I spent like 3 weeks back here in Singapore like catching up on work and everything, and then I did another trip, like another month-long trip to Australia. Again, the first time was sort of like, you know, to visit family and then to kind of like take some space from, you know, all the hustle and bustle. And then the second time was to attend a friend's wedding. I realized that on my first Australia trip, I actually didn't take the time away to rest, because I was so busy working on so many different projects, including the podcast, that I thought, okay, I'm going to actually take this chance now that I'm here for the wedding to really, really take some time for myself and to, you know, think about what's next for me. Because I feel like I'm kind of at a crossroad in my life right now, where a lot of big things might be happening within the year. I'm very busy preparing for my MA, my master's program. And if I do go ahead and pursue it, that will be in either London or New York. So that means kind of like uprooting my entire life and then shifting halfway across the world, like 15 hours ahead of this, of Singapore, of where I'm at. And then that also means, you know, wrapping up a lot of like loose ends here in Singapore with work, like in terms of like my acting, like my social media work, and then also trying to decide what's going to happen next with this podcast, right? If I go and do my MA, you guys already know what my mindset is when it comes to, you know, pursuing my studies. And it's not going to be something that I just blindly go into, right? And it's going to be a huge jump from university as well, because, you know, the experience that I got in university was I tried to really like narrow in on my interests and work as rigorously as I could. But the standards to which I will be held at my MA program is probably going to be much higher, because it's not a four-year program, it's a one-year program, which means it's way more intensive. It's so much more stuff packed into, you know, one single year, one single academic year. And then the projects are going to ask for a lot more because it's so specific and you're already meant to like sort of have a background or like some, you know, some foundational work involved. So you're not taking like that same four-year journey of, you know, coming in with nothing and then slowly building up to something. It's like, okay, you're already expected to have a baseline of some sorts, right? And I wanted to make sure that going into this, my baseline was a little bit clearer to me, that I wasn't just going in for the sake of doing it, because it's going to be a very expensive program. Rent is going to be very expensive, and it's a huge change that I'm essentially making in my life. So I wanted to really take this trip, this recent trip in Australia, to privilege that sort of like introspection for the future, right? And I really managed to do just that. This time when I went back to Australia this month, I didn't plan anything at all. I didn't even have any spots that I wanted to hit. I think also because I was fresh off the previous trip to Australia like less than a month ago, like a lot of the spots that I wanted to hit, like museum exhibits, different like suburbs that I love, like I had already kind of like hit them. So I didn't feel rushed coming into this new trip, right? And because I had like prepared myself in that headspace, it really opened up so much space for like play and for self-discovery in a way that I did not expect at all. So like, for example, one of the things that I've been considering of late is, you know, when I move into my MA program, which is like an arts and politics program, how much of that do I want to be like the practice of arts? And then how much of that do I want to be like the writing, like the academic writing part of it? Because the last 4 years has just been purely academic writing. But then I also have like the previous 6 years before my uni education where I was, you know, actually practicing theatre. And then I know that in the MA program, they're going to offer me both. And it's kind of up to me like how I want to strike that balance, right? And I think for a long, long time, I was very, very scared to like even, I think since leaving SOTA actually, I was very scared to sort of think about approaching the arts again or like approach practicing the arts again, because I left kind of like with this feeling that I wasn't good enough because of like, you know, a variety of circumstances. And then when I found my passion for writing, and academia, I felt like, oh, maybe this is the way that I should approach the arts instead. Maybe this is what I'm like better suited for. But then the more I thought about it during this recent trip, the more I thought like, you know what, actually, you can't really properly separate the two. Because the ways in which that my academic writing is very strong is also a result of my 6 years of like practice prior. Like I was able to bring in that perspective to kind of make sure that I was approaching my academic research in a very holistic sort of way, right? And then it also kind of like begs this like more theoretical question of like, can you truly separate art from, you know, its staging, its performance? And I think the answer that I landed at was no. And then so how do I sort of like work up that courage to practice the arts again, right? And that was something that I really tried to explore this trip in Australia. And I was able to do that because I was removed from my social circumstances and my everyday life here in Singapore. I know that if I'm here in Singapore, what I'm going to be doing is that every single day I'm just going to be working on my, you know, my regular day job, on this podcast, on so many other different things, that space to like introspect just becomes like smaller, or I don't like privilege that space, right? But because I was removed from that and I could really just take a step back away from work, find activities that could nourish me enough to start thinking more concretely about this these ideas that I had, right? So some of the ways that I went about doing that was, you know, watching like shows, like watching theater there, like watching musicals, going to different museums, seeing different exhibits, and even just like going to the museums itself, intentionally going in there and then trying to pinpoint what exactly about the experience that I liked. And that really led to like a brand new, completely brand new discovery, which really surprised me, which was that I was very interested in the curation aspect of the art. And then I had the time to sort of think about like why I was so interested in that and how that blends in with the rest of my interests. And then I sort of realized that, oh my gosh, I'm really like starting to develop this interest in curation. Maybe I need to go back and then look at the MA programs again and then see if the MA programs I've applied for actually feeds to that interest in any sort of way, or if I should be looking to apply anywhere else. And I think that that is a perspective that I was able to, you know, reach not just because I had the time to introspect, but because I had access to more resources that could then like draw that realization out of me. If I'm being like really, really honest, the curation aspect here in like Singapore museums is just not as strong as somewhere like Australia's. That's for like a variety of reasons, right? Like for one, the history behind, you know, the teams and the museums is far longer in Australia than it is in Singapore. And Singapore was still very, very new to these like art scene developments, right? So this is not like a shade or like a diss to the art scene here in Singapore at all. But I'm just saying that being in a different country and then having access to those resources that are, you know, culturally and historically specific to them allowed me to then discover new parts of myself. And it's not just about what the country itself has to offer, it's also about the kind of people that you're surrounded with. And I haven't seen my friends in Australia for a long, long time. Before COVID, and then I was very busy with uni as well, so I haven't seen them in something like 5 years. And getting to reconnect with them again also opened up like a whole new different side of myself. I think the me from 5 years ago and my friends from 5 years ago are so, so different than the people that we are today. And it was such a kind of like honestly mind-blowing experience to take that step back and realize that everybody had grown so much and the people that I had in my head are no longer actually that same people, if that kind of makes sense. In my head, like my imagination of them was the them from 5 years ago. Like they were stuck there, like they didn't change in my mind because I hadn't seen them in so long, right? But then when I saw them again, I had to kind of like get to know them again, which was such an interesting experience. Like, when do you get the chance to like know your friends again? Like to get such a fresh feeling from it. And then to go in with like, okay, this sense of like familiarity, like I know you guys and I trust you guys, but then I also now have to understand you guys again, understand where all of you are at and understand how that impacts our dynamic. That was such a lovely experience. Number one, you know, just getting to reconnect with the people I love again. But then number two, opening myself up to like new dynamics and like new forms of interactions, which allowed me to tap into the side of myself that like values play and spontaneity. I remember, this is such a nice memory. I remember we were just having, you know, a little barbecue in the backyard of the house. And then some of us were just hanging inside the house. And then music from Spotify was like playing. And my friend and I just like started like dancing in the living room. And I haven't danced in a long, long time. I used to like dance like baby ballet all the way up until I was, I want to say like 16 years old, where I stopped because school was getting very hectic. I think I mentioned this in the last episode, which is that I went like back into dance, like lyrical, contemporary, but then I eventually stopped. That was like maybe when I was 18 or 19, and then I was way too scared to try again after I left, because dance along with like theater, they are just forms that require your body to act like an instrument, right? And when you don't use it for a long time, it kind of feels like your instrument has like gone out of tune. Like it's not at its sharpest, it's not at its best. The more years that elapse between my last dance and now, the more inadequate I feel about approaching dance again, right? And because I started with like a ballet background, my idea of dance is very almost like rigid, which is like so ironic, because I think in most cases, like when it comes to the art, I really believe in like a very open form of play. But I don't know, in my head, like ballet, like it kind of like shaped my mind to be like, okay, I want to master this dance. I want to like get all the steps right. I want to, you know, act with like grace, like with precision, like all these different things that I lost a sense of play when it came to dance. But then when my friend and I danced in the living room and we just like sort of made it up, and I was so surprised that my body still had like the muscle memory of dancing. It still remembered like this vocabulary of like dance moves, and it still knew how to find like synergy with someone in dance. Just that one small experience alone like went on to spark this thought in me that was like, whoa, like I don't need to make sure that the way I express myself is perfect or like comes out a certain way. Sometimes it's just about the act of play, being spontaneous and just responding, allowing your body to like respond to what's around you, like the people around you, the space around you, like respond to like the music. I don't know, it was like mind blowing to me. And it's all these like little interactions, right? Like going to the museum or like dancing with a friend, like dancing like in the car park of like some random park. All these little experiences kind of like sunk in. And then when I came back to Singapore, I was like, okay, I like started looking for my ballet shoes. I was like looking for ballet classes. I'm like thinking of all the different ways that I want to start playing and expressing again. I mean, I don't know if this is like, is this too personal? I'm like talking so much. Like I feel like this is like so personal, but I'm just trying to like demonstrate or like share just how like expansive this form of self-discovery can be. When I say like self-discovery, I don't mean like head off to, I don't know, Bali, like meditate and, you know, write in your little journal, have your eat, pray, love moment. Like that's not what I'm talking about. I'm talking about like just being present in a different place and then making full use of that experience to understand yourself and to learn new things about yourself or to just, you know, come back into your own body. I feel like when I'm steeped in the hustle and bustle of work, I start to like float out of my own body and just like, you know, autopilot it. But when I travel, like traveling alone intrinsically demands that you are aware and like, you know, present at all times just to keep yourself safe. That kind of like opens up the space to then tap in and then try and understand yourself in a different way or like try to look at your life and your choices and all these different things in a new and different way. And when I say that it's not like an eat, pray, love experience, I really mean it, like not just in the way that I've just described, but also in the way of like I recognize that not everybody, you know, can like drop their job and like go on like a 2-month retreat, like meditation, yoga retreat. Like that's not realistic for many people, right? And I mean, even for myself, when I was in Australia for a month, like I was still doing work. And I, you know, I have the privilege of having like a job that allows me to travel. So with that in mind, I know that not everybody's going to be able to take like that 1 month off to travel and like go find yourself. But again, I don't think that this act of like finding yourself, or, like discovering yourself or like finding new perspectives really necessitates you traveling for like a month, for like an extended period of time. The fact is, all these things that I'm describing, you could do even without traveling. It's just about carving out that space. Like what I'm trying to illustrate is just that when you do travel, that is like an area that you can tap into. It's not just about like going overseas, having fun, like taking photos. It's also an opportunity for you to get in touch with yourself. Whether it's a short like 3-day, 4-day trip to like Malaysia, or you're taking a week off, a month off to go to Europe. This is like an act that is constantly available to you if you sort of take that step back to introspect and to give yourself time to think and be intentional and to be aware of yourself. This act of like coming into your body, I've also spoken about like in the previous episode when I talked about yoga, for example. So that, even that, right, that's a 1 hour of like coming back into your body. So how can we look at travel as like a way to extend that? And I think the next pro to traveling alone is not far removed from whatever I've just said, and that is that it kind of instilled this sense of confidence in myself. Because I've always known myself to be a very independent person, traveling solo kind of like compounded that belief. It made me realize like, actually I can manage on my own, and when I'm like sort of like left to my own devices, I am not lost, I am not feeling like frazzled. In fact, I feel like empowered. I feel so empowered that I get to make all these decisions for myself and choose what to do with my time and choose how to organize like my brain space, for example. All of these things over the years and over my different travel experiences have contributed to like a sense of self, and a sense of self that is confident and empowered in being able to make her own decisions, being able to take care of herself. Like all of that gives me such a sense of returning to my own body again, because it's like reminding myself, like outside of your daily routine that you've become so accustomed to, you still know how to do new things. You still know how to create new experiences for yourself. And that is something that is so important to me, right? Like in the previous episodes as well, I've talked about like self-directed activity. And I think the reason why I keep going back to self-directed activity is that it really stems from this deep sense of like trust, like trusting yourself or like learning to like, listen to your own body and listen to what your gut tells you, or like, listen to what your body wants, listen to what your needs are, listen to what your wants are. Self-directed activity entails all of these different elements that ultimately come to shape who you are as a person, right? Like, for example, all the ways in which I feel so, like, independent when I travel solo, they don't just disappear when I come back to Singapore. They don't just stop engaging because I am not traveling. They are things that I carry into my everyday life. As a freelancer, when I think about how I choose to divvy up my time or, like, divvy up my resources, I realize that, you know what, if I can do that while I'm traveling, then that's something that I can apply in my everyday life. I shouldn't leave the experience of, like, self-discovery and creating space for myself just to when I'm traveling somewhere else. How can I take that experience and then bring it back into my real life? And being able to constantly, like, work on that and constantly compound that belief eventually led to, like, this sense of self-confidence to direct my life in a variety of different ways, in big and small ways. So a small way would be, like, awarding myself with a sense of trust to take that leap and become a freelancer. I mean, okay, actually that's quite a big thing. I was gonna say that that's a small thing, but actually I feel like that's a big thing, because freelancing comes with a lot of doubt, with a lot of uncertainty. It's not a stable job. You never know what your income's going to be like. But then taking that leap of faith and saying, you know what, I think I can do this. All these are big decisions that I can make because I have learned to trust myself. And travel is one of the ways that I have learned that sense of trust. And then something big that's upcoming that I can think of is if I do end up going to pursue my master's at the end of this year, picking up, uprooting my life, and then going there to study all alone, without my friends, without my family. Like, that is a scary thought, but I don't think I have ever, like, had a flicker of doubt that that is what I wanted to do. Number one, because I'm so passionate about what I want to study for the ME. But number two, because I know that I have had experience being alone overseas before, and I have been able to manage. And I'm not saying, obviously, that, like, traveling 1 month in Australia is going to be the same as starting a new life in New York for, like, a year. It's not the same thing, but it's like I have, like, that germ of an experience that I think, you know, gives me some sort of indicator on how I will come to adjust to a new life somewhere else. I don't think I would have had so much certainty in that decision if not for all these experiences in which I have, like, proven to myself that I can trust myself. So if you're listening to this right now, take some time to really think about the ways in which you have shown yourself that you are competent and that you can trust yourself. Whether it's through travel or through work or through school, whatever it is, how are the ways, like, the small ways in which you've shown yourself that you can be trusted? And then how is that sort of, like, manifested into bigger ripples of, like, movement or bigger ripples of, like, decisions in your life? Because this realization that I had that these small acts added up to something much bigger, to the things that I want to do in my future, was something that only came to me when I really sat down and thought about it. It wasn't something that I was, like, lying in bed and I was like, whoa, like, light bulb moment. It wasn't that. It was when I really took a step back and was like, why am I investing so much money in traveling? Like, why do I like traveling so much? And why do I like traveling solo so much? And why am I willing to take a month off work, even if that means my income is a little bit lower? What exactly am I getting out of it? And then when I really stepped back and thought about it, this was sort of, like, where I landed. And that's amazing because I think it kind of, like, exceeds the monetary, like, investment that I've put into it, right? Let's say I put aside, like, $1,000 for a trip, and then I do, like, all these different activities to, like, exhaust that $1,000, like my flight tickets, like my tickets to, like, a musical, tickets to museum, blah, 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 food, accommodation, whatever. It's like, okay, I got all these, like, material benefits in return. But then beyond that, like, what are the intangible, like, benefits that I've gotten? And this is what I've gotten. And to me, like, that's a worthwhile trade-off. Because even back when I was 18 and beginning to travel with my own money that I had earned, I sort of had to really think about how much money I wanted to put in to traveling. When you're fresh out of school, when you've just started working, you don't have all that much financial resources to, like, pump in traveling, right? So you need to be quite, like, judicious about it. You need to be intentional about where you put your money because you don't want to spend it frivolously, right? And so I thought, okay, what are certain things that I don't mind spending on, and then what are the things I'm gonna cut back on? So for me, it was like, okay, I'm gonna take budget flights. I'm gonna, like, stay in maybe, like, a women's hostel that's, like, cheaper than a nice Airbnb or a nice hotel. But then what I am gonna spend on will be things like experiences, like going for shows or, like, going to museums. And I think that's something that has still continued to shape the kind of decisions that I make. Like, when I go into a trip, I know where I want to spend my money or where I want to sort of, like, cut back, where it's not so important for me to spend money. And then beyond just these, like, very practical concerns, it's also, like, thinking about where this money is going to in terms of, like, my own personal development. Like, how is it contributing to, like, my sense of self? How is it contributing to the kind of space that I want to create for myself to play and to explore. So I think all of these are interesting considerations to make before you think about your next trip, whether it's with friends or whether it's solo. Because I think a lot of people just look at travel as something like, okay, I just want to escape. I just want to get out of Singapore. I just want to like have a bit of fun. But I think travel can be so much more than that. And it's just about really taking the time to come back into your body and think about where you're putting all your resources, your time, your money, and then landing in a place that makes sense to you, that's comfortable for you, or that pushes you to grow in the direction that you want to. Okay, so to wrap up this little section on the pros of traveling solo, I'm going to answer a question that one of you sent in to the podcast Instagram. And if you ever have, you know, a little opinion or a little something you want to share, you want to get a little update on what episode we're filming next, go follow us on the podcast Instagram. That's Back at the Party, BackOfTheParty. Somebody sent this in. They asked, what are the activities that are better for solo traveling? Okay, my answer is going to the museum and walking around aimlessly. Going to the museum because I generally don't really like going to the museum with somebody. I feel a bit like pressured. I feel like, you know, we need to like go through the museum at the same pace. And I'm somebody who takes a long time in the museum. I really love to like take my time, read the write-up, like inspect the work, like really like get up in there and like look at it. I can take like honestly an entire day from morning until closing time in one museum. And I feel pressured because I know most people don't enjoy the museum that way. They kind of just like go in, read, walk through, okay, I'm done, let's go for lunch, right? So for me, going to the museum is a lot better alone. Walking around aimlessly is also better alone, in my opinion, because I feel like when you're with a friend, I don't know, I just feel like there's this pressure to like do something, to like make the most of your trip, like to make the most of your time together. And then there are all these things that probably the both of you like want to do that you sort of have to like rush around to do. I've never gone traveling with a friend before and we sort of just like walk in the city. Like, I've never done that, but I like to do that, right? And then also, let's say you walk around the city with your friend and then you see something that interests you. What if your friend is like, I'm not interested, right? But I want to see it. I don't want to feel bad for wanting to see something, right? But I think it really depends on your needs and what kind of person you are. If you're somebody who likes to discuss what you're seeing in the museum, probably don't go solo. I think it still kind of goes back to the initial idea, right? If you want to travel solo, or if you want to travel at all, you need to be conscious, you need to be aware to find the things that you like and then tailor your itinerary from there. And I think that's like a good recommendation, right? Like going in with just a list of things you want to do and then not necessarily saying like, okay, I need to do this thing on this day. Because let's say maybe you go to like a food market on one of these days and you realize, oh my God, I love food markets. And then you can sort of look for more food markets to start in for the rest of the days, right? So I think the point is like there is no sort of like set activity that's best for doing alone. It really depends on what you enjoy doing. And then that necessitates that you are in touch with yourself. So moving on to some cons of traveling solo. So I think the first con is something that I've already sort of mentioned, and I think it is a pro and a con. And that is that you constantly need to be switched on. And that can be a little bit exhausting, right? Because you're in a place that you're not as familiar with. You need to be like constantly wary of your surroundings. You need to protect your belongings. You need to make sure your passport doesn't get stolen, or you need to, you know, constantly be like navigating through these areas. So many things that demand that you are wary and present. And that can be a good thing, like how I already discussed, but it can also be very, very exhausting. On the other hand, when you travel with somebody else, you can sort of like divvy up the work a little bit, right? You can say like, okay, like today I'm in charge of the activities. Like I'm going to be the one who like navigates us through this country. And then tomorrow, you're the person who's like navigating. Or it can be that, you know, just the very fact that you're not alone. Like when you go to the toilet, you can leave your bag with your friend and feel safe that your passport's not going to get stolen. Whereas if you're alone, you always have to make sure like, okay, I'm going to, let's say I'm in a cafe, I want to go to the toilet, but my food is here. And then I have to take my bag along with me. But then what if somebody like you know, spikes my drink or something? There are all these different like considerations and concessions that you need to make when you travel solo. So I would say that that's one of the drawbacks. But to me, that's not a big drawback, or at least it's not big enough of a drawback that would stop me from traveling solo. But some people, you know, are just a little bit more comfortable having a companion with them and just prefer not being switched on all the time when they're on holiday. So that's something for you to consider if that's like a compromise that you're willing to make. I think the other really good thing about having somebody along with you on the trip is that you get to try a lot more food. This is a very underrated con, I feel, because when you travel with a friend or a group of friends, what then is able to happen is that you guys can, let's say, go to a restaurant and order like a lot of different dishes and try a lot of different things and then split the bill like all these different ways, right? But when you travel alone, it's like, how much can you eat? You go to a restaurant, you can maybe order like two or three things, and then you're gonna have to pay like the full expense of the meal, and you're gonna have to try and finish everything. I haven't had too much trouble with it, to be quite frank. Maybe because I can eat a lot. So when I was in London, I went to like this restaurant that had really huge servings, but everything just looked so good. So I ended up ordering like a little like charcuterie board, and pasta, like a side, dessert, two drinks, like, and I polished all of it. And the thing is, like, I know those six things that I ordered, I could have also just shared with like two other people, right? And then the bill would have been divided three ways. I just didn't have that option, and I wanted to try everything, and I didn't want to make a compromise on like trying the different foods. So then I ordered six things, I had all six things, I was stuffed, and then I had to foot the bill of six things. I think that's one of the good things about having like adult money, which is that you can afford to like treat yourself once in a while. I'm not saying that like every meal I had there was extravagant. I mean, I had KFC on some days, you know, I had just a small little meal on some days, but then on some days, you know, I go all out, I treat myself at a nice restaurant, I order enough food for three people, and then I foot the whole bill. Besides food, another thing that you get to share when you travel with somebody else is like accommodation, which honestly, again, to me is not that big of a deal, because traveling solo also means you can just find like cheap accommodation for one person, and you're not going to spend that much time in your accommodation anyway, so you can sort of like make do. I don't know, some people are very, very fussy about where they stay. Some people want it to be like nice. For me, it doesn't matter so much, because I know that when I travel, I'm not going to be spending that much time at home, so I'm okay with just, you know, finding like a decent, good price sort of accommodation. Again, that's like a compromise that you need to think about whether you're okay making. And I think like the tricky thing to these compromises is that oftentimes you won't really know until you actually try it out. I think in the past, when I was a little bit younger, I used to be a lot more fussy about where I would stay. I would want it to be like very clean, very like nicely put together. It wasn't until I actually tried traveling, and then, you know, I was like, ah, if I want to spend more money, like let's say on watching like musicals, then I have to like cut back somewhere to stay within my budget. Okay, I'm just gonna opt for this accommodation that, you know, looks like not the best. I mean, like not the most nicely put together, but, you know, decent, safe. And then I did it and I was like, oh, actually, it's not too bad. I really actually don't even spend that much time in the Airbnb. I just sleep here, use the toilet and skedaddle. Then I realized like, oh, that's a compromise that I'm perfectly fine making. So it's the same thing all around, right? Like, these are the sorts of things that require trial and error, require you checking in with yourself. But that's also, I think, one of the fun parts about it. Like, going there and actually trying and then learning more about yourself. To me, that's a fun experience. And that's an experience that can't be replicated very, very easily. My last con is not really a con so much as it is a warning. And my warning is, do not travel solo and look for romance, okay? I'm looking straight in the camera for this, both cameras, okay? Do not go and look for romance, okay? I probably need to back up from the mic or the audio is gonna be out of whack. Not only am I speaking from personal experience, not only that, I have been seeing all these TikToks on my algorithm, on my FYP, of these girls who are like wrecked after finding love on their travels. Guys, the age-old adage is right. Catch flights, not feelings. Girls, if you catch feelings, you will be catching flights again. And to what end, I don't know, okay? To me, there is just no logical reason to find romance while you're traveling, because, like, what are you expecting? What are you expecting? You guys are in different countries, yeah? And anyway, I feel like everything is just more magical when you travel. You're like, oh my god, like, this is so fun, like, this is so romantic, I'm having my Ypres love moment. It's all delusion, okay? And I'm gonna get into this when I tell you my horror stories, my traveling horror stories. Mom, Dad, Mama, if you're listening to this, if you're still listening to this, even though I told you to log off at the beginning of the episode, this is your cue. Leave right now. I'm about to get serious and you need to go. Okay, the rest of you. My first story for you, you know what? In fact, I think most of my stories are gonna come from my time in Korea, where I was truly in a phase of like, I'm so cool, I'm traveling on my own, I'm like independent, I'm like making new experiences for myself. I was like crazy up in here, okay? It's really a miracle that I'm alive. Some of the other stories come from my trip to like London, Amsterdam, which I'll get into later. And as I tell you these stories, guys, I want you to know that I do not condone any of the behavior that is about to be illustrated. In fact, I'm telling you these as warning stories, okay? Please glean from it that these are behaviors that you should not engage in, okay? Please learn from my mistakes, okay? But let's get into the first story, okay? So when I was in Korea alone, my first week alone, your gal was, you know, swiping on the dating apps. Not a good start to the story. I was swiping on the dating apps, and then I matched with this guy who's Singaporean. Let's call him L, because I really took the L there, okay? So I matched with L, and he's like a Singaporean boy, okay? And I'm like, oh, fancy meeting a Singaporean here in Korea. And I'm like, oh, okay, what are you doing here? He's like, oh, I'm on holiday with my friends. And he is like a couple years older than I am. I remember at that point in time, like, he was in university, like, just starting uni, and then I was just on the cusp of, like, enrolling into university as well. So he must have been, like, what, 2 or 3 years older than I was? Obviously, I meet him, and you know, I check, like, okay, no catfishing going on. Make sure, you know, we've got some mutuals, like, look at the Instagram, all's good, you know, not sus. Good. I'm alone in Korea, right? So, again, my itinerary, free and easy. He's like, you want to meet? I was like, okay, let's meet. So we realized that we're both staying like in the same area in Seoul. So we're like, okay, let's just go to like a restaurant like in our neighborhood. And then we meet, we chat, we're like drinking a little soju. We drink a soju, but I can handle my alcohol. I'm not drunk, I'm not anything, right? But we're just, you know, having a good time. I'm like, oh, it's pretty fun. We're like, you know what? Let's go to the club. Let's go to the club. So we go to the club. It's all fine and good, you know. In all fairness, and I was okay. He walks me back to my Airbnb. And in hindsight, me 5 years later, I now realize that that is an L move. Sure, go on a date with the person you don't know. But then if you're in a foreign country alone, you know, don't tell them where you live, right? Okay, anyway, I go to the Airbnb and like, I don't even remember why, but I'm locked out of my Airbnb. Like the passcode's like not working, yeah? So I just like sit on the stair outside my Airbnb and like wait for somebody to like come out. And then he like, okay, in all fairness, very gentlemanly, stays with me. But the man falls asleep and I'm like, I don't know what to do. Like, I'm trying to like, I'm like messaging my Airbnb host, like, hello, why is it not working? And then this guy is like asleep on my lap. Anyway, eventually somebody comes up from the Airbnb. I'm like, hey, L, like, wake up. Okay, and like, thanks for waiting with me. Bye-bye. Like, let's keep in touch. In all honesty, at this point in time, I'm a little bit like, catching feelings. I'm like, oh my god, this is magical. Like, what are the odds? I like, you know, match with like a fellow Singaporean in Korea, and we're staying in like the same area, and we have such like a fun, magical night, and you know, he's not weird, he's really gentlemanly, he sends me home, he waits outside the Airbnb with me. I'm like, okay, like, let's keep in touch. So in the following days, yeah, I'm like texting him, and then he slowly begins to, I guess, his interest wanes, and then at some point, like maybe 3 days in, he ghosts me. Heart shattered, just shattered on the floor. I was like, here I was thinking that like, oh my god, I'm gonna have such a cute story, like, I'm gonna meet like my dating app boy like in Korea. We're gonna like go back to Singapore, we're gonna be like connected. Lame, loser. Wake up, Megan. Like a year on from that, I was like, you know what, that guy, whatever. What was I even thinking? I could obviously register that it was just like the magic of being overseas, having like such a fun experience overseas, right? If you thought that story was crazy, buckle up. That was the mildest story, okay? Because nothing bad happened on that story. I was just ghosted. Boo-hoo, whatever, okay? Here's the next dating app story. This one is so bad. Like, I honestly was really contemplating whether I want to like tell this story or tell it in its entirety because it's so bad, okay? I'm swiping on a dating app and I match with this Korean guy. I'm like, oh my god, Oppa! Oppa wants to take me on a date! Bear in mind, I'm like, what, 18? Unhinged, crazy-ass Megan, solo tripping in Korea. Literally, okay, if this guy kidnaps me, whatever, like, no, nobody's gonna know. Nobody's gonna know, but I went on that date anyway. It was actually really nice. We actually had a really nice date. We went to a cafe. We went to, like, a nice, like, Korean barbecue place. He, like, grilled the meats for me. Oppa slay. And then things start getting a little bit weird. He's like, oh, I need to go home and take something. Do you still want to hang? If you still want to hang, like, you want to follow me home? I don't know what possessed me, but I said yes. I didn't go in the house with him, okay? I was like, okay, I'll just wait outside. Because he wasn't like, oh, do you want to come in my home? He was just like, oh, do you want to just go to my house like area? You can just like wait outside for me while I go grab the thing. I need to, you know, like settle something at home. I guess I was just having too much fun on the date. I was like, okay, I'll wait for you outside. So I wait outside his house. 15 minutes pass and I'm starting like getting the heebie-jeebies. I'm like, Maybe this was not so smart of an idea. But he comes out. He comes out and he's like, okay, let's go. So I'm like, oh, okay, I was just thinking too much. Like, that was not dangerous at all. So we go for like karaoke. He's like a vocal student. He's like from an art school. He's like singing. And I'm like, oh my God, Opa Slay again. This is where it starts to get a little bit shady. At that point in time, I was not aware of this. But if a Korean guy asks you to go to like a DVD room, it's the equivalent of the other Korean slang, which is like, do you want to eat ramyeon? Yeah, I'm not going to go too deep into that for, you know, parental guidance purposes, okay? Google it if you want. I didn't know that. I thought he just wanted to catch a movie with me. So I agree to go to the DVD room with him. And maybe the first sign that something was up was when the lady at the DVD room was like, can I see your ICs? Some form of identification. I guess she wanted to check that we were of age. Oh my God. I just know that my parents are going to be like frothing at the mouth if they're listening to this. So I really hope that they're not. But basically, man tries to make a move on me, yeah? But he tries to like kiss me. But I'm not into it. So man is respectful, doesn't do anything with me. But just think about it, yeah? That's actually a really dangerous situation. I can't believe I put myself in that situation. I can't believe I put myself in a dark enclosed space with the man. Like, what was I thinking? What was I thinking? Okay, so nothing happens in a DVD room. Whatever. And then this guy, after we finish the DVD room, he's like, okay, let's go for supper. We go for supper. And he's like, oh, do you want to go to a motel together? I was like, huh? I was like, what do you mean, sir? I was like, I don't want to go to the motel together with you. He's like, oh, okay, but I don't think I'm going home. I'll probably go to the motel anyway. Like, you can just join me if you want. And then he opened up his wallet and said, oh, but I don't think I have enough money to go to the motel. Can you lend me some money? And then I'll return to you tomorrow. I guess when he talked about the motel, the red flags, like the alarm bell started ringing. I was like, wait, something's not adding up, right? I don't know why these alarm bells didn't start ringing immediately, like hours before, but they started ringing now. And I was like, okay, you know what? No, I need to get out of this situation. I was like, okay, anyway, nice date. See ya. Thanks for the date. Bye. And so I left. I was 18 years old, guys. I did not need to be putting myself in that sort of situation, okay? I don't know what I was thinking, okay? The conclusion of this is do not go be like swiping on whatever dating apps because like why? Don't do that. Don't do that, okay? It's dangerous. Or even if you're like swiping on your dating apps, like make sure that you are accountable to like a friend. Like tell your friends like, oh, I did do this. Like tell your friend like, okay, I'm going to meet like this stranger from the dating app. Just check in on me and I'll check in as well. Give you the update, the live update that I'm safe. I mean, I did do that, thankfully. But then also, you know, just don't put yourself in precarious situations. You know that TikTok song that's like, don't make unnecessary journeys. Don't take risks. That, okay? I want that song to be playing in your head when you go on your solo travels and you're swiping on your dating apps or when you're, you know, striking up a conversation with a stranger. Don't do that because it's a miracle that I got out of there unscathed. Okay, God was watching and God said, Megan, I'm taking care of you today because clearly you cannot take care of yourself. You cannot make good decisions. I mean, I don't really tell this story because it's like pure stupidity on my part. I just really had no reason acting up like that, okay? I don't condone this behavior. So the conclusion of those two stories is don't, you know, don't do that, yeah? You know what, guys, though? Can I just say, even though I'd be like messing up and stuff, I also really discovered new parts of myself. For example, I was really surprised that my command of Korean was strong enough to actually go out on a date. All this time I'm using Korean, like, okay, I can speak with my family, like, in Korean. I can get around as a tourist in Korean. But guys, going on a date in Korean is a whole different level. Like, this guy didn't know how to speak English. I fully spent, like, a whole 8-9 hours with this man, fully conversing in Korean, like, getting to know him in, like, a romantic sense. And I did that all in Korean. I was so impressed with myself. How did I do that? My command of Korean was strong enough to go on a date. Okay, that was my self-discovery. And did it instill a sense of confidence in myself? Yes, now I'm confident that I can speak Korean. Was it worth it? Maybe not, but you know, you take what you can get, right? You take what you can get out of these bad experiences. But there's more. There's more. So the next story is also slightly romance themed, but not off a dating app. Okay, so this is when my friend joins me on my second week of Korea, and we decide to go to the club, right? And we're just, you know, minding our own business. We're like having fun, and then these two guys like around our area a little bit like interested, and then they start like discussing us, and I'm just standing there. I'm like, like they think like they're saying all these things, thinking that I don't know what they're saying, but I know exactly what they're saying because I understand Korean. They're like saying like, oh, like this girl, like she's cute, like her friend is cute, like which girl do you want? Like which one will I take? Which one do you want? Let's like wingman each other. And then I just turned to him and I say to him in Korean, I was like, I can speak Korean. like, I understand what you're saying. And they go, and you can just immediately see the fear, like, set in their eyes. They're like, oh, man. Like, oh, shucks. She heard whatever we were saying. They still strike up a conversation with us. And they're about our age. Okay, we, like, talk, we dance, whatever. And then we get out of the cup. We decide to go for supper together, like, somewhere in the area. It was really nice. It was really fun. All good. So basically, there are two guys, right? One of them is interested in me, and then the other is interested in my friend. So let's call the guy interested in me guy A, okay? And then the guy interested in my friend, guy B. And guy A and guy B, they're not friends. They just met in the club. So guy A foots the bill at supper. We try to, like, go Dutch, split the bill evenly, but he's like, you know, I'm really rich. I'm going to, like, study in an Ivy League school. Like, my grandfather, he's, like, so rich. He's, like CEO of some, like, big shot company. Like, I drive a Lamborghini. Like, I can get this. I'm like, okay, then. I mean, it wasn't that expensive. It was just, like, a random, like, shop, not expensive supper, okay? I was like, okay, whatever. You can foot the bill if you want, Mr. Big Shot. After we do the supper, they're like, okay, do you want to go, like, karaoke? And I guess karaoke is, like, a huge thing in Korea. I mean, even just walking the streets in Korea, like, you see a lot of, like, different sort of karaoke bars. Like, whether they are, like, you know, like, KTV sort of styles or, like, coin karaoke. It's like you put a coin in, you sing one song sort of thing. By the time we get out of the, like, supper place, it's like daylight. Okay, so we go to the karaoke place, and it's a very nice karaoke room. So it's not one of those, like, coin norebang places. It's like a nice room, but it's not dark. Okay, it's like nice and open, like, you know, very visible. So it's like, feels safe. So when we walk into the place, we pay for the norebang first, right? We pay for the room. So my friend and I tried to, like, get the bill for the room because, you know, he already paid for the food. So we're like, okay, it's only fair. This guy starts pitching a fit. Mr. Big Shot really wants to get the bill. He's like, no, like, I'm getting the bill. Like, ah. He's like arguing with us. I'm like, whoa, like, chill, brother. Like, you can get the bill if you want. Like, you don't have to be so damn aggressive. Like, chill out. But you know what? We're like, okay, whatever. Like, we're already here. It's like an open-ish sort of space. Like, it's not, like, dark and enclosed, right? So we're like, fine. We do the karaoke. It's fun. Okay. We get out of the karaoke. Okay, I want to go home. Like, we're tired. We're knackered. It's like, I don't know, like 7:30 a.m. or something like that, right? Public transport is running by this point, okay? Like, there are people on the streets. It's early. We want to go home, and then we are just sort of, like, in, like, the city area, which is where the Airbnb was at anyway. So we're like, okay, bye. We're going home. And then guy A is, like, saying, like, no, I want you to come home with me. And I'm like, no, I'm going home. And he's like, no, you're coming home with me. And this happens, like, as he's, like, trying to flag a cab, right? He's like, no, you should come home with me. And then a cab, like, drives up, and he starts to get into the cab, and he tries to pull me into the taxi with him. He fully, like, is using his body strength trying to pull me into the taxi with him because he is, like, insisting that I go home with him. I'm like, oh my god, like, what the hell? And thankfully, my friend is there, and she's, like, dragging me. Like, she's like, no, she's not going with you. And guy B is also there, and guy B, who is not guy A's friend, is like, whoa, this guy weird. So guy A leaves in a huff, like, so pissed off. I think he's maybe thinking, like, oh, I spent my night with this girl, like, paid for the food, paid for the karaoke, and then she's supposed to come home with me. Like, I'm so handsome, and I'm rich, and, like, I'm going to an Ivy League school. Why doesn't she want to go home with me? Whatever, okay. Then my friend and I were like, okay, my god, let's go home. I'm tired. That's traumatizing. Whatever. So then the guy is like, okay, yeah, I'm going home as well. Which direction are you guys going? My friend and I were staying, like, in a city area, but the train station that's nearest to our place has a lot of different exits. They're, like, something like 16 exits or something, right? So he's like, oh, where are you guys going? So we're like, oh, okay, we're just going, like, into the train station and then taking one of the exits out. And he's like, oh, okay, I'm also going into the train station and taking one of the exits out for the bus. And that's not suspicious because it's just basically one of those, like, huge train junctions in the city that, like, leads you to a bunch of different places. So it's not out of the ordinary that he'd be going the same way that we are, right? Because we are in the city and there's so many exits. So we, like, walk into the train station together. We're, like, walking towards our exit. And he's like, oh, wasn't that guy, like, so strange? Like, please don't think that all Korean men are like this. Like, we're not. Like, he's just really weird. Like, blah, blah, blah. And we're like, okay, yeah, this guy's really nice. So we exit at the same place together. And we're like, okay, bye. Go take your bus. We're going to walk home. And okay, so we part ways. My friend and I start walking to our Airbnb. And then at some point, we turn around and we realize that guy B is following us. And so we're like, oh shit, like, what do we do? Like, we've still got some ways to go to the Airbnb. Thankfully, it's daylight, but it's still pretty early in the morning. There's not many people walking on the streets, right? So we're like, oh shucks, like, what do we do? We know that there's a convenience store in between the train station and our Airbnb. So we're like, okay, let's dip into the convenience store. Let's like get some stuff and then see if, you know, he is really following us. So we go into the convenience store, we wait it out, we come out and we see him like hiding in a corner. And we're like, holy shit. So we're like, okay, what do we do? What do we do? What do we do? So we start like walking. We're like walking fast. We're like brisk walking towards our Airbnb. And at this point, we're like maybe just a minute off. And when we start getting closer to the Airbnb, we already know like we cannot escape him. He's going to know where we stay, right? The only thing we can like do is to make sure that he does not, I guess, like follow us into the Airbnb, right? So we start like running to our Airbnb, like hoping that we're gonna lose him. And we like, we're like, we have like the passcode ready. We like get into the Airbnb, we slam the door. We're like so scared. And he starts banging on our door. He's like bang, 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 banging on our door. And we're like, oh my God, what do we do? What the hell? And that bang, he's like, oh, like I saw you like go in. I know you're inside. Like, can you just let me use the toilet? Like, I just want to use the toilet. Can you open the door? And he's banging so hard that basically, this Airbnb has like two rooms and each room has like bunk beds, right? So my friend and I were taking one room and then there are two other girls taking the other room. And he's banging so loudly that the two girls in the other room wake up and they're like, what the hell is happening? And we like wait like a full half an hour before this guy clears out. And we are like so scared that if we open up the door, he's just going to be like hiding in a corner. So we really like sit there and we wait it out. We are so scared to even just use the toilet because the toilet window is like right next to the door. We are just so scared that something's going to happen. I mean, eventually we waited it out, he left, and all was good. But that was like a crazy experience. And I think all these stories sort of just contribute to this idea of like, it's really dangerous traveling alone as a female. And I'm not going to lie, it is. I think I've been put into enough of these sort of like situations, not just in Korea, in other places as well, where like men have, you know, seen me alone as a female doing my own thing and then come up to me, try and strike a conversation with me. And you know what? Striking up a conversation with me is fine, but then they try and like ask me out. They're like, do you have any plans? Like, do you want to grab a drink? Like, can I ask you out for dinner? And it just puts you in a really uncomfortable position because not only do you want to say no, feel scared. Like, you don't know that if you say no, like, they're gonna take it well, that they're gonna respect your decision in saying no, right? So I'm not gonna lie, like, safety is a huge concern, which is why I guess that brings me back to like this whole idea of like, you have to be constantly aware. You have to be aware of your surroundings. You need to know that if you are put in a dangerous situation, what are your options? Like, are there people around you? Is there a street you can run out onto, which is like crowded with people? What are like the relevant like police numbers? Are your friends aware of like where you're at? Are your parents aware of where you're at? These are all things that you kind of like need to have ready to go, you know? As a young woman, especially, like, it's easy to like buy into the fantasy of like, oh my God, I'm gonna travel overseas and I'm gonna like find romance. I'm gonna have like a nice, sweet little like summer romance in like Korea or like in Europe, wherever, right? But I mean, the reality of it, as you can tell from these stories, is that it's not always gonna be so peachy. Or in fact, most of the time, it's not peachy. These guys, they think like, okay, you're a tourist, you're here and you're not as aware, you're not as comfortable in these surroundings, you're gonna be easily swayed, easily manipulable. And they think that they can get away with like a variety of behaviors with you. I mean, even just take, for example, the fact that they were speaking in Korean about us, thinking that we didn't understand them. Just me being able to understand the language of the country was such a huge help in like protecting myself, right? And these are all the small ways in which traveling alone is difficult. Now, I'm not saying that it's only a problem that is prevalent for females. Like, I'm sure males can also be put in that position, but it's definitely like, in my lived experience as a female, is something that I have had to like deal with, and I have had to be aware of traveling solo. Even just with this story of me going to the club, I wasn't alone. I was with a friend. And yet that still happened, right? So I'm not gonna like sugarcoat it. Like, as much as I love traveling solo, like, I can't sugarcoat these very real dangers that you're going to have to be aware of and going to have like fail safes to protect yourself. And these stories, you know, they're funny, they're elaborate, but they're also just, you know, very little everyday things that, you know, require your awareness to keep yourself safe as a woman when you're traveling. Like, even when I was in London, I remember just, you know, casually minding my own business, walking down the street, and there was just this group of guys who were like, you know, playing around, like dancing to music, like taking photos of their friends, like just being goofy. And then all of a sudden, as I'm walking, one of the guys from the group just lunges at me and tries to like grope my ass. And because, you know, I was sufficiently aware of my surroundings, I could feel that their attention was on me, and I could feel that he was just about to lunge at me. So when he lunged at me, I managed to like very swiftly dodge. So from all those stories, I guess the pain point is that I am a woman, right? But then there is a different pain point that comes with traveling, and that comes out especially when you're traveling solo, in my opinion. And that is racism. And especially because I am not just a female, but I'm a Chinese, like Asian female. And this becomes very prevalent when I'm in a country that's predominantly white. I think like where I experienced the most of this was in Amsterdam, actually. So I did a trip to Amsterdam last year. And while I was in Amsterdam, I experienced so much racism. I remember just like sitting on a bench, minding my own business, like taking photos on my camera and like vlogging. And then this guy comes up to me and he starts, you know, striking up a conversation with me. You know, it's interesting. He's like a very interesting person. He's telling me like he's from Egypt. He moved to Amsterdam to like start a life, whatever. And then he's like, oh, where are you from? And I'm like, oh, I'm from Singapore. And then he goes like, oh, you're from Singapore. How come you can speak English? Arguably, it's like, you know, this is like a small experience. But then it just speaks to this like general lack of awareness to like a greater world outside of, you know, whatever your Eurocentric environment is. And it's also the fact that it's not just this one single isolated incident. It's a lot of incidents compounded together with that. And when he asked me, how come you speak English if you're from Singapore? And I go, oh, we speak English in Singapore. It's greeted with a lot of like doubt and disbelief. It's never like, oh, I didn't know that they speak English in Singapore. It's like, oh, are you sure? I don't think so. That's not what I heard about Singapore. It's like, I'm literally telling you, I'm from Singapore and we speak English. Like, why is it that you willfully choose to doubt me or willfully choose to ignore that this is my experience and you're asking for my experience? You know what I mean? And then later on that night, actually, I went to a bar and I was at the bar alone. I was, you know, minding my own business again. And then this group of like white men come up to me. Also, I think around my age, they start like hitting on me. And they're like, hey, like, what's your name? And I'm like, oh, my name is Megan. And they're like, oh, but what's your real name? I just paused. I was like really confused. I was like, what do you mean? What's my real name? My real name is Megan. And he goes, no, you know, what's your real name? You know, like, doesn't your name have like funny symbols in it? And I think what he was referring to was like my Chinese name. But it's like, you know, something even as simple as like, you're asking for my name and I'm telling you what my name is. And even that is greeted with disbelief. It cannot help but read as like, if not racism, at least a sense of like ignorance towards other countries or other races. It's the fact that I am an Asian woman alone in a bar full of white people that you think you can come up to me and then have that sort of conversation with me, right? That very same night, I left the bar. I met up with some friends, and one of my friends is like a Korean girl. So we're walking down the streets about to catch our taxi, and these group of white girls are riding on their bicycles. They ride past us. They stare us dead in the eye as they ride past us, and they look at us and they go, ling, 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 ling. And I'm like, and we are just, like my friend and I, we are just like shell-shocked. We just stop in our tracks and we look at each other and we're like, did they really do that to us? Am I thinking too much? Like, is that what they were trying to do to us? Were they trying to be racist? It was definitely not a pleasant experience, but it was also interesting, right? It was like, racism often seems like such a faraway concept, especially when you're not facing it every single day, right? And I do have that privilege of, you know, in Singapore, being like a Chinese person, there are very little demands on me to constantly and consistently acknowledge my race here in Singapore as a Chinese. But then when you're transported to a different country where the demographic is completely different, and when you come from a country that maybe not many people know, like Singapore, like maybe people in Amsterdam don't really know what Singapore is, where it is, then you're faced with all these like little encounters that maybe don't seem like very much on its own. But when it compounds, you're like, oh, this is like a reality of the world, of racism, of traveling alone as an Asian female in like a European country, for example. So I think that's like a dimension that is also good to like have in mind when you are preparing to travel or like travel solo. I think as I travel alone more and more, and then I also travel to different like places, I start to, you know, get a better awareness of the world and also how to protect myself, right, in terms of like safety. When it came to like the Korea stories, I've kind of like already spoken a little bit about how I learned from those experiences to keep myself safe. And then with these experiences with racism, then it's like, okay, gaining an awareness of like, this is a very real experience that I might face if I travel to like a different country that, you know, more Western, more European. And then how do I sort of like process that? Right. So equipping myself with the right tools to be prepared for that and to process that if it does happen. But I think the ways in which I have approached like traveling solo has also developed in a variety of ways outside of like safety. And I think one very major change, which I think will be helpful for you guys if you're thinking of traveling solo, is to think about how you want to plan your trip. I think my approach in trip planning has deviated a lot over the years. So I think I mentioned just now that when I first started traveling, I like to, you know, really pack my itinerary, making full use of my experience overseas, making full use of like the money that I've spent to travel overseas. But I think that has changed over the years, mostly because I'm looking beyond just like pure material value that I'm getting out of the money that I'm spending. I'm also looking at the immaterial things, like all the personal growth, like the space for development, things that I've mentioned like earlier, right? And because my priority has sort of like shifted in that way, it has also changed the way I plan my trips. So now when I plan my trips, I usually start by compiling a list of things that I want to do, and then I organize it based on like activity. So for example, I have like a list of like food places I want to go to, a list of attractions, a list of art activities. And then from there, if I want to really do like free and easy, I wake up, I decide, okay, today I want to like maybe visit this place for food. And then today I feel like going to a museum, maybe this museum. I have like all these things ready in my arsenal to like pick from. And I think a really useful tip for that is to actually pin all your stuff in Google Maps. So in Google Maps, you can actually create lists. And what I like to do is I create like a list for each country that I visit, and then I put all the pins down. And so let's say today I feel like, okay, I want to go to like this cafe that's in this suburb. Then when I click on that pin, I can also see all the other things that I've pinned around that area. Like what's around the area that I did say I wanted to hit. And then that helps me like sort of like plan my trip a little bit more efficiently. But I will also say that the caveat to that is that you kind of need a little bit more financial freedom to be able to do that, because back when I was planning my itinerary very stringently, part of the consideration for that was also that I wanted to be able to budget for my trip very stringently. I wanted to know how much would I be spending on food, on attractions, on accommodations every single day. And in order to, you know, come up with those calculations and then see if the trip fit into my budget, I needed to have that sort of like organization. Now that I'm a little bit older, you know, I'm earning my own money, you know, made some progress in terms of like my financial planning, I can afford to have a little bit more flexibility in terms of how I want to plan out my trip. That being said, it doesn't mean that I just go all out and I spend blindly on the trip. It just means like certain things I'm more willing to spend on, and then certain things I'm less willing to spend on, which I've already, you know, touched on in the earlier part of this episode. I think how I plan my trip also very much depends on like the location. So let's say I plan a trip to Australia. Because I've been there so often and because it's kind of like basically a second home to me, I never really feel the need to plan my Australia trip. I can totally just rock up there with no plans and then make it up as I go, because I already have like favorite spots, I have favorite shops, I have favorite cafes, I have favorite suburbs. So even without planning, I kind of know that I'll have things to do. Of course, if you're traveling to a completely new place, then a little bit of planning is necessary, right? And I assume that you would want to plan because there are certain spots that you're going to want to hit. And I think it's useful to have a list of spots that are non-negotiable. Like let's say there are like 5 things on your list, non-negotiable, you must visit. Then you know that you have to like prioritize those and like slot those in maybe in the earlier part of the trip when you're like fresh, when you have a lot of energy. And then it also depends on whether you know the language that the people in the country speak. Like if you speak English and you go to a place that speaks English, and you already know that you're going to have a far easier time navigating around, you might not need to do as much planning. But let's say you go to a place like Korea and you don't speak Korean, then it's gonna be a little bit more difficult to navigate. It might be a little bit more difficult to like be spontaneous. Then that's when, you know, you need to plan a little bit more. So it's all about just making all these like smart decisions around your trip planning, right? Another interesting way that I've approached it is also sometimes I like to theme my trips. So I've already spoken about how I themed my last 2 Australia trips. I think something interesting was how I themed my London-Amsterdam trip last year. So last year I went to London and Amsterdam with Sony Music, actually. So it was supposed to just be a short like 3-day trip to London to catch Harry Styles in his one night only concert in the O2 London, because he was just, you know, releasing his album. And from there I was like, you know what, if I'm already going to be in London, let's see if I can extend the trip. So I was fully going to tell Sony Music, like, you know, can I extend the trip? Like, don't worry about my return flight, I'm going to cover that all on my own. You guys just need to, you know, book the flight for me like there as per usual if the engagement was just going to be that 3 days, right? Sony Music was so wonderful. They actually said, no, you know what? Go ahead, extend your trip. We'll still pay for your return flight. Just let us know when you want to return. I was like, okay, then I'm going to extend my trip. I'm going to do like a 2-week trip in London and in Amsterdam, because from London to Amsterdam, you can just take like a Eurostar train. It just takes a couple of hours to travel down. And I have friends in Amsterdam as well, and I do want to visit Amsterdam. So I made like a whole solo trip, like a work trip turned into a solo trip. Because it was London, immediately I knew that there were things I wanted to do. I wanted to visit iconic museums that have always been on my bucket list, like the Tate Modern. I wanted to watch musicals on the West End. I had a whole list of musicals I wanted to watch. I wanted to go to the Globe and watch like a Shakespeare play. So for me, the London and Amsterdam trip was very much like a art and performance trip. Mostly planned my schedule around like the tickets that I had booked to musicals. There were 5 shows I wanted to catch. Moulin Rouge, the musical. Dear Evan Hansen. There was Hamilton. And then I wanted to catch a Shakespeare play at the Globe. And then I wanted to catch Lord in concert. Most of my days were basically planned around then, because ticketed shows are fixed timing, right? Let's say it's like 2:30. Then basically I know that I only have like morning until 2:30 to spend. And then after the show, it's going to be like, what, 5:30? Basically, I can fit in a dinner and that's it, because the museums close by like 6. If I want to go to the museum, then I know I'm going to take like a full day there. So that's like morning until closing time, and then I'm just going to be able to fit in a dinner. Because I kind of like themed my trip that way, it was very easy for me to plan out my itinerary, because it was just like, okay, today I'm just going to hit like 1 or 2 spots, and then I just have to find food that I want to try that's around that area. So I think if you're interested in traveling solo and, you know, you're new to it, there are quite a number of ways you can go about it. You know, there are all these different approaches, whether it's, you know, you want it to be like a full-on heavy on attractions and sites and like touristy activity sort of trip, or you want it to be like an art trip, or you want it to be a trip where you have a lot of space to like breathe and explore and play. Theming your trips and then knowing what you want to get out of your trips, knowing where you want to place your money, where you want to place your resources, your energy, your time, like all these things are kind of like a hidden dimension that people don't talk about when they talk about preparing for trips, right? There is a very standard way of looking at trips, which is just like, think of all the places you want to go to and then find a way to like fit all of that in, which is fine and good if that's something that you like. But I think, as always with this podcast, what I'm trying to do is present to you a different way to look at things, right? How can you look at travel in a completely different way and then completely make it your own? How do you make your solo travel your own experience and get the most out of it in every single way? So if you got to this point of the episode and you're thinking like, okay, I think solo traveling is something that I might be interested in, and I think I want to sort of engage in these approaches that we've discussed, your next question might be like, okay, but then how do I get started? Because traveling solo is a very, very daunting thing. Like I said, I had the privilege of, you know, traveling a lot when I was younger, and then having a lot of family all over the place and having parents who really like encouraged that sort of behavior. But, you know, if you don't have that same experience, traveling solo might be very scary for you. And I know that it is for a lot of people, because, you know, you guys have expressed that sentiment to me on Instagram, like via DMs, and even my friends are always asking me like, how do you travel solo? Like, isn't it scary? I think a really, really good way to start, which I always recommend to people, is to start by traveling with your friends or traveling with your family, and then taking like 1 or 2 days out of that trip to spend on your own in whatever capacity that feels comfortable to you, right? So it could be as simple as, let's say you travel with your family, but then you tell them like, okay, today I'm just going to go and do my own things. And then you go and like explore the city on your own. But at the end of the day, you still come back to like the same accommodation as them. Or it could be like what I did when I was in Australia. I took a couple of days off and I traveled to like a completely different part of the country, stayed on my own away from my family for a couple of days, and then had like that full couple of days experience alone. I think if traveling solo is like a new avenue that you want to explore, you don't really necessarily have to be like, okay, now I'm going to go all in. I'm going to spend $2,000 on my own solo trip. You don't have to make big moves to make these changes. It can be very small. If you already have a trip coming up, think about how you can sort of like implement whatever we've discussed here in this episode into this upcoming trip, right? It doesn't have to be big. You can start very, very small. But these small things are the very things that are going to allow you to check in with yourself and think about whether you like these things, whether these things are something that, you know, you're interested in exploring even more, or whether it's something that you're even comfortable doing. Another tip that I would offer if you want to try and get started on this is to maybe visit some place where you're a little bit more familiar with. So like I said, because I'm so familiar with Australia, that was pretty much like the most perfect place for me to start solo traveling, because I felt safe. I didn't feel like I was thrown in a completely new environment. I was able to kind of like test the waters a little bit, right? So let's say you're somebody who like maybe travels to Korea with your friends very often, or Japan with your family very often. Maybe consider going back to those places, going back to a place that you're semi-familiar with, where there are less unknown factors at play, so that you can slowly start to ease yourself into this new experience. My third tip would be to probably choose a place where you can at least minimally speak the language that they speak. So, you know, if the only language that you're really proficient in is English, go to an English-speaking country. If you can speak, let's say, like a little bit of a conversational Korean, then maybe Korea is a good option. Or go to a place where you know, like, even if you don't speak their main language, that they are a country that, you know, has other language alternatives. Like in Korea, a lot of the merchants actually speak Mandarin. A lot of like day-to-day people that you see on the streets also speak English, for example. So I guess having an awareness of those like options available to you is really helpful, because you don't want to, like, let's say, go to like Russia and you are completely lost there alone. You're going to feel so helpless. Let's say something happens, you need to speak to police. You're going to be so completely out of your element, and that's going to be so, so scary for you if you're just starting out. When you travel solo, you want to make sure that you create as safe of an environment as you can, and you control at least some of the factors in a relatively uncontrolled environment. The very last tip that I would have for you is to really set up a lot of channels of accountability. So for me, when I travel solo, because I'm a female, because I'm, you know, just like a 24-year-old girl, I know that traveling solo puts me in certain potential spots of danger, right? So what I do is that I create like a Google folder with all my travel documents, like scans of my IC, my passport, my insurance, my visa if relevant, my vaccination certificate, any sort of like relevant documentation, all in one folder for my parents to access. I have like a document with like emergency contacts, that's like maybe like the Airbnb host, like the email, my own foreign number, numbers of like maybe family members or friends that you will be meeting when you are there, and then keeping these like open lines of communication, like with whoever, be it your parent or like a friend, just having someone know that you are alive and like what you're going to do today. Like, especially if like, let's say you're going to go out and like meet a new person, making sure that your friends or your loved ones are aware of what you're doing makes a huge difference. Not just only in terms of like, let's say you're really in danger, somebody can help you, but then also for like your own peace of mind, knowing that, let's say something really does happen to you, there is somebody out there who is like actually waiting for you to text back. Somebody who knows that, you know, they have access to all these other like essential documents and essential numbers to get you help if necessary. So I think that's a good place to end off. Some practical tips for you if you want to start traveling solo. But I think honestly, a lot of these tips and a lot of these like perspectives are useful to adopt even if you are not traveling solo, or even if you are not traveling at all. I think same as all the other episodes that I've already done, a lot of these perspectives that I'm offering are simply a new way to sort of like reorganize your mind or reorganize your perspectives, how you look at your everyday choices, how you look at the ways in which you invest your resources, invest your time, invest your efforts. It all boils down to having this sense of like self-direction. I think in the previous episodes, we've talked a lot about like self-directed activity, right? And we're still talking about that here. But I think we're adding in this like element of trust in yourself. And then also, you know, being responsible, being accountable. And then most importantly, and then most fun of all, which I think is an element that is very unique to travel, is the creation of space to play and explore and discover. Again, that's not something that's unique to travel, but I think that it's something that is very valuable to travel. And it's what I ultimately value a lot about traveling and traveling solo. And I think at the same time, I want to sort of like, you know, prompt you to think about your own experience traveling. Even if you've never traveled alone before, your experience traveling with friends or family, how have those trips expanded your perspectives in whatever sort of way? Whether it's becoming privy to different ways of living, of life, to different cultures, to different ways of like expression and representation. Like, how has that sort of like manifested in your own lives? And is that something that you want to continue exploring? I think that's going to kind of like help you answer the question of whether solo traveling is for you, or whether traveling is for you, whether that's an activity that's a worthwhile investment for you. As much as I love solo traveling, I know that it's not everybody's cup of tea, and it's certainly not something that I'm going to be like, oh no, I'm like, guys, I'm gonna like convert you into becoming like solo travel advocates. I know that it's not for everybody. And I think all of this speaks to this need to just be aware, not just of yourself, but also of your surroundings, of your life, of the choices that you make. So I would love to hear your thoughts, whether you're a frequent solo traveler or you hate solo traveling, or if this is something that you want to explore. I would love to hear, you know, what you have to say, your own experiences. Some of you have already been sending in some of your really funny and exciting solo travel stories, which have been so fun. I love hearing from you guys. So if you have something to share with me, or if you have a suggestion for future episodes, feel free to drop me a DM on our socials. That's Back of the Party at BACKOFTHEPARTY. And if you enjoyed today's episode, don't forget to drop us a follow on our Instagram, on our TikTok, as well as any platform that you listen to this podcast on. We're available on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, and YouTube. And don't forget to share this with your friends, share this on your social media. Getting the word out really helps me to produce more episodes for you guys. And I will see you 2 Mondays from now. We release new episodes every other Monday at 8 p.m. Until then, I hope planning for your next trip is like planning a little party in celebration of yourself, of play, of creativity, of discovery. Yeah. Bye!